This is AMDA On The Go, your gateway to expert discussions, journal article reviews, and innovation in post-acute and long-term care. AMDA On The Go is a presentation of the Society for Post-Acute and Long-Term Care Medicine. Support for this podcast is brought to you by U.S. Post-Acute Care. This podcast is eligible for ABPLM pre-approved certified medical director credits. Details will be provided at the end of this podcast. And now here's our host for AMDA On The Go, Dr. Wayne Saltzman.
Welcome to AMDA On The Go. This podcast will discuss a current initiative to improve the health and wellness of older adults in the community. In a 2015 Journal of the American Geriatric Society, JAGS, special article entitled "Failing to Focus on Healthy Aging, a Frailty of Our Discipline," the authors argue that all of the studies on frailty represent only a minority of older adults, and there needs to be a focus on the upcoming generation, the baby boomers, who are considered proactive, self-motivated, and participants in their own healthcare and in successful aging. The authors also question whether the geriatrics community can take on the task of mediating successful aging and leverage its resources to create meaningful change through research, educational efforts, and program development. The authors conclude that vision, determination, organization, and leadership are paramount in establishing preventive gerontology, and note successful examples of community-based approaches to optimizing health and aging. Are there programs that will create a substantive change in the care of older adults? Can we create a system of quality care that is elder-centric and actionable for providers throughout our healthcare continuum? Well, Dr. Alice Bonner, a renowned national leader in the care of older adults, believes that there is and is herself an advocate for such a system. And we are fortunate to have Dr. Bonner here with us now to lead us through the age-friendly health systems. Dr. Bonner has been a nurse and nurse practitioner for over 40 years. She is a family care partner, educator, and researcher. And just to say, Dr. Bonner has asked me to call her Alice. So Alice, it is my pleasure to welcome you to AMDA On The Go.
Well, thank you very much. It's great to be here today. I look forward to the conversation.
Thank you. Alice, I typically like to start with somewhat of a historical framework to set the tone for our discussion. In a 2017 editorial in JAGS entitled "Age-Friendly Health Systems, Their Time Has Come," authors Allen and Auslander discussed how the Hartford Foundation and the Institute for Healthcare Improvement, IHI, deserve credit for focusing on the looming social and healthcare challenge for an aging society. They laud the organizations in leading an initiative so important around a 4M model: what matters most, mobility, medications, and mentation, as a refocus, so to speak, on geriatrics, quality and safety, person-centered care, as well as the financial impact of care, and the need for further regulations on caring for older adults. So a lot of questions to start out with, but lead us through the evolution of the Aging-Friendly Health Systems Initiative. How did IHI and Hartford become involved? What were the drivers or motivation? Or when you think about it, what was the trigger that was pulled in what seems to be a grassroots movement to address the needs of our older adults in today's communities?
Wow, that's a great set of questions. I'll do my best to start and I'll tackle it and you can jump in here because this is, you know, these are areas you work in as well. You know, I'll start with a bit of a disclaimer by saying that I was not involved at IHI 3 years ago, or between 3 and 4 years ago, when age-friendly health systems became a movement. So I think, you know, the beginning was when a whole bunch of people who've spent their lives working in care and support for older people in communities and in public health you know, looked at what was happening around the United States in particular and said, you know, we can do better than this. This is just, this is not even a system. We don't even have a system of care and support for older people. And when you look across the different settings, whether you're talking about hospitals or nursing homes, assisted living residences, home care, community support for people living at home, you know, there's just no really sound, solid, effective interconnection between all of those different entities. And so when age-friendly health systems began, it was because, again, a bunch of people who've been doctors, nurses, social workers, pharmacists, and other professionals for many years looked around and said, boy, you know, we don't have the best care for everyone in this country at any age. And I know sometimes right now people do see the focus is on older adults, and that's absolutely true. And, you know, it's really the community of people who work with older people and communities who are involved with this. But it truly is a movement so that in this country we deliver the best care in all those different areas that you mentioned, the four M's, to people at any age, and that we do it consistently, reliably, every time, every staff person, every family member, and every person, whether they're a patient or a resident or a home care client. And so, you know, over the last 3 years, this work on the age-friendly movement has spanned many different types of health systems. I know a lot of AMDA listeners here may work in long-term care settings such as nursing homes, either post-acute or long-term, and they may work in assisted living residences as well. And, you know, the thing about all of us as we get older is, you know, even though we go from one setting to another, I'm still just one person. It's just me here. And so, yes, I have different sets of needs when I'm in the hospital, when I'm acutely ill, and then if I go to, you know, subacute or rehab for a few weeks, and then if I go home again. But in any setting, I have a set of goals and objectives. And that's what's so important about age-friendly health systems is wherever we go within the system, the healthcare professionals who are supporting us should be asking, what matters to you? What do you care about today? What do you want to be able to do that you can't do any longer? Or, you know, what do you really dream about being able to do? And the reason is, you know, we can't guess what those things are for our friends, our colleagues, our family members. It's in their heads and their hearts and their souls. And what's important is that we ask the question. So what matters is really foundational and age-friendly. Things like mobility and mentation and medications are things that, you know, in my 30 years of doing this, I would say pretty much every single resident I've cared for in any setting, I've really thought about all four of those things. So I'll stop talking now, but I'm happy to pick up the thread going forward. And I would say, as is so often the case, the history here is that it just took a couple of people, a handful of people talking with one another, and, you know, one person as a champion saying, gosh, this just, you know, this must change. We can do something. Let's get out there and take action now.
Wow. So Alice, let's get into the meat of it a little bit more. The Allen and Auslander editorial that I referred to is actually itself referring to a very important JAGS article entitled The Age-Friendly Health System Imperative, in which Fulmer and others ask the question, what better time to encourage, they're referring to our administration, to seriously examine what an age-friendly health system might look like? So another bunch of questions, just really kind of diving in and segueing from what you just talked about, you know, what does it look like? You know, what does it entail? How, you know, there was talk about in the main article about value, you know, we're switching to a value-based system. How was it intended to create value in care? And, you know, what was the buy-in, you know, from the systems that first started, the five systems that participated? What did it take? You know, and I guess, you know, at the end of the day, you know, what does an organization get out of participating, you know, in this system of care as part of a age-friendly community?
Right. Great questions. So I would say that from the beginning, and it continues to be true to this day, the focus is actually on the people who are receiving care. So if it's a patient in the hospital or a resident in a nursing home or a tenant in senior housing. So it's about delivering the best care, you know, to those individuals wherever they are and meeting their needs and asking about what matters to them. So the benefit there is better quality care, and that translates into a lot of positive, you know, reinforcement feedback and word of mouth. So somebody says, I got great care, you know, at such and such a health system, you know, they really believe in age-friendly care. There's posters all over and people ask me what was important to me, and they, you know, they adjusted my medications and so forth. So there's a lot of that positive feedback and word of mouth. And then, you know, there's also the translation to unnecessary utilization that we don't want because people don't benefit from it. So, you know, going back to the hospital and being admitted or going back to the emergency room if you don't need to be there is an unnecessary and very high cost. So, you know, we worked with some health economists, people like Victor Tebusch from the West Coast, and, you know, they developed these ROI models, meaning return on investment. And so they were able to demonstrate with the data from those initial five pioneer health systems that not only were people's quality outcomes better and their clinical outcomes were better, but in addition, there was a significant savings to the health system. And, you know, sometimes the health system is the payer, so it might be a health plan, might be an accountable care organization, et cetera. But very often now we have provider payer groups, so it's gotten even more complicated. But the bottom line is, if care is better, people have better outcomes, they have a better opinion of, you know, the experience of care. And on top of that, if there's a cost savings to the health system, those are all some of the things that drive organizations to think about doing this and to think, wow, maybe this would generate more value to our health system and we'd be able to capture that. And, you know, to be able to demonstrate the evidence for that increased value is part of what age-friendly does, because the five pioneer systems in the beginning did lots of testing of measures, quality measures, qualitative and quantitative. And so that led to building this, this whole suite of measures, if you will. And now we're doing the same thing with nursing homes. We're bringing nursing homes into the mix and, you know, building a set of measures for those nursing homes also. So just final comment is, while we started with five pioneer systems, the number now, I think, is over 880 teams. Wow. 880 teams across the United States working to become age-friendly.
Managing your patients' needs across multiple specialties is increasingly important, but also an increasingly challenging task. U.S. Post-Acute Care now offers clinical staffing solutions not only for primary care medicine, but also for behavioral health, chronic care management, and telehealth, bringing you a more comprehensive solution for your patients and your facilities. Now more than ever, your patients need you in so many ways. Let U.S. Post-Acute Care help you deliver more complete quality care. For more information, visit us at uspostacutecare.com.
We are speaking with Dr. Alice Bonner about the Age Friendly Health Systems Initiative. So, Alice, as picking up from the last point you made about skilled nursing facilities, you know, as you know, as you are a board member with the Society for Post-Acute Long-Term Care Medicine, a central motivation for the society has always been, you know, what can we teach or discuss today that we can put into action, especially by our as you know, I like to call them our JoAmdas in the trenches, our providers, you know, tomorrow. What can we teach today that we can do tomorrow? You know, interestingly, the Allen and Auslander JAGS editorial ends with the question, what will you do to implement the age-friendly initiative in your community? As you, a segue for the last question, you know, regarding now incorporating the skilled nursing environment. So specifically with regard to that environment, how does it play into this initiative? You know, what are, you know, are there models? You know, what are they? What should providers be doing or thinking about? Or, you know, you've mentioned the quality metrics. How do those play? You know, can the skilled nursing facility play a significant role to impact the system? And, you know, especially as we consider that the folks who are rotating through the skilled nursing setting are most medically complex, and there is significant downtime, so to speak, within the skilled nursing environment, that, you know, we can have some great conversations and some great proactive management.
Right. So great questions. And one of the, I think, part of the special sauce of the age-friendly health system movement is that it actually provides practical, down-to-earth suggestions and recommendations. And it provides, you know, best practices or better practices, things that have been tried and have been successful in other organizations. So we bring entities together in what we call action communities, and there's always an action community running. So there's one now that's being run by one of the hospital associations, or I guess that's now, and then there's gonna be another one starting in March. So I would encourage people listening to this podcast to go on the IHI website, and I think we may even be able to share the links here. But you can go on the IHI website and you can look up how to join an action community, and you can look at the guide to the 4 M's, and just there's a whole bunch of materials related to the initiative. But what I was saying at the beginning of my response is there really is very practical information. So with medications, you know, if the team is looking at having been cited on their state survey or gotten a low rating on a particular quality measure, and it has to do with polypharmacy, which everybody listening, I'm sure, is familiar with. There are really specific ways that you can address that in terms of deprescribing, medication optimization, working with your PharmD, you know, lots of really practical ways of approaching the care of each person who's in that nursing home or assisted living residence, and specifically looking at improving medication management. So that's just one of the M's, but you know, there's the same thing for mobility, for example. How often are people getting out of bed? This person's capable of walking 50 feet with a therapist. Well, can they walk on the weekends when there's no therapist in the building or whatever? So I do think that, again, part of the magic here is it's not magic. It's just... It's very, very much approaching this from a pragmatic, practical standpoint. What can you do today? What can you do tomorrow? Just like Auslander and Allen, you know, talked about. And, you know, Dr. Terry Fulmer, who's the president of the John A. Hartford Foundation, is absolutely one of the powerhouse advocates beyond this work. And she really brings it out and into many communities and encourages all of us to do the same. And, you know, it ties into age-friendly communities. And I encourage everybody on this call, in addition to thinking about age-friendly health systems, you know, health systems are part of communities. We're all connected. So look at what, you know, in your city or town, go on the municipal website, go on the town website. Is there anything about age-friendly communities in your town? If not, there's something you can start. And, you know, it could be really different from what you do in healthcare. But I hope I answered your question about, you know, what can people do right now? And, you know, what's the allure of joining the age-friendly movement? Because I think if you talk to anyone who's done it, like there's nobody who's really you know, walked away from it after they've started, they really tend to say, you know, in the beginning we weren't sure, but now we're really converts and we really can see how this has helped our practice.
So, Alice, as has become customary in the time that we have remaining, I typically like to be somewhat provocative with my guests, but not too much. At last year's American Geriatric Society meeting in Portland, Oregon, I sat in the general session where the preeminent geriatrician, Dr. Mary Tinetti, stood up and presented or discussed the age-friendly 4M initiative for which she is very much involved. Couldn't help but think to myself as I looked around the room at, with all of my colleagues in geriatrics, and think, don't we do these things already? You know, we have been talking about advanced care planning, goals of care, serious illness care for years. We have initiatives around medication deprescribing and the society, you know, AMDA has been at the forefront of that. We have always been talking about ways in which to mitigate falls. And of course, we are always thinking about assessment and management for those who have the syndrome of dementia and supporting family and caregivers. So, you know, when I think about everything that we're talking about, I can't help but also think, isn't this geriatrics 101? And so, I guess I'm asking you, does putting a name on a collective program really make a difference in how we are currently approaching the care of the older adult today as we thought we were?
Right. So I would say that a lot of organizations raise that question. But what we find when we really look at the data around the country, the actual results of what's happening across all settings, hospitals, home care, PACE programs, nursing homes, is that in a lot of these settings, people think they're doing it, but they're not doing it reliably and consistently with all staff, with all residents or all patients all of the time. They're doing some of the 4Ms, maybe one of them, maybe two or three, and they're doing it some of the time, but when they get busy or, you know, there's lots of other things going on, other priorities, they're not necessarily demonstrating the consistent use of the 4Ms all of the time. And so that's what we're trying to do, is the imperative is taking us from where we are today, which, you know, there's a lot of great organizations out there, that are doing the 4Ms in different ways. And there's a lot of organizations that have these great opportunities to do more consistent, reliable, you know, application of the 4M framework. And so that's what the imperative is. We have the ability, we have the capacity to do 4M care all of the time, you know, with all team members and all patients and residents. And we really believe that we can work toward that as a goal, and we can get a lot closer to it than where we are now. So, you know, it's certainly not meant to say that we're not doing anything, because obviously we are doing a lot, and there's a lot of, our associates who are working hard on these things. But we truly believe there's this ability that we have to do more, and it will benefit everyone, including all of us, because you and I are aging too. And so we really want this to be the way we deliver care in our country and throughout the world. This is really an international movement, and it's not just a one-off, and it's not something that's going to come and go. The idea here is that this truly becomes the way everyone delivers care.
And I think it's important to add, you know, as I circle back to the initial article that I referenced in the introduction, where the article discussed how taxed the geriatrician system continues to be, that this is not a geriatrician initiative. This is something that anybody in healthcare can actually do. So there really is no limitation on being able to carry out this the 4M project. Isn't
absolutely that right? Yes, that's absolutely correct, Wayne. And you know, the 4 M's are so basic, they're so foundational and so basic, they're things that everyone learns or should have learned when they went to nursing school, medical school, social work, public health, et cetera. And so it's not as if you need to do a 2-year fellowship in geriatrics to be able to have an age-friendly health system. And as a matter of fact, we heard a great presentation earlier this week from Rush in Chicago from the, you know, the health system. And they talked about and they put up, you know, picture maps of all the different parts of the organization that are learning about or actually practicing age friendly. And it was pretty dramatic in terms of, you know, the university, the professional schools, the health system itself, the communications people, the cities and towns around it. It was a real education in systemness and how you can create an actual system for age friendly care.
You do not need to be an older adult provider to provide age-friendly care. Wonderful.
There you go. Perfect summation.
We have been privileged to speak with and learn from Dr. Alice Bonner on age-friendly health systems. Alice, thank you very much for spending your time with AMDA on the Go.
Well, thank you very much for having me. And thank you to all our colleagues and friends and everyone out in the field who is listening to this today. We appreciate your work at the point of care and everything you're doing, you know, during this challenging time. So thanks for all that you do to help everyone in your practices. And we really do appreciate it. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, Alice. References for this podcast can be found at paltc.org/podcast. Until next time, I'm Dr. Wayne Saltzman for this innovation podcast that we call AMDA on the Go.
Support for this podcast is brought to you by U.S. Post-acute care. If you are a physician and interested in obtaining ABPLM pre-approved certified medical director credits for certification or recertification, go to our new learning management system at apex.paltc.org. Click on podcast and follow the link to this latest episode. Thank you.